two very significant words come in this meditation on Bhagavad Gita. One is Advaitamrita Varshini. This Bhagavad Gita bestows the knowledge of oneness or non-duality. And that is a great blessing. It is called Amrita, the nectar, the source of immortality. We all seek immortality and unending, never-ending life. And how do we get that? That is by realizing that we are one with the whole existence. There is really no separation. When I consider myself to be a small separate piece, I am subject to birth and death. When I get the knowledge that I am the existence itself, then there is no conception of death there. Not that you drink something and then you live for a long time. It is not extension or stretching of this life. But it is graduating into the real life. We shun, we give up this mortal life and get into the true life by realizing this oneness, this all-pervading existence itself, that non-dual existence. So Bhagavad Gita brings to us this experience. Another thing that is spoken of is, the other word is, that bhavadveshini. It is where the bhava has, etymologically it means coming into being. But in this connotation it has, in this context, is that this world which appears and thus we get caught in it, that is called bhava. This getting caught into this cycle of birth and death, getting caught into this world of suffering, that is called bhava. And Bhagavad Gita hates that. It eliminates that. So that is another idea there, that it tries to take us beyond that by bringing in, ushering in the knowledge of the non-dual existence, that is our true nature. So, while we were discussing the fifth chapter, Lord Krishna has told that, look, we keep on unnecessarily thinking that, well, I have been doing something wrong and sinful, and maybe I will incur sin, and then some God will be there to take care of me, and the God will shower some blessings and then take me to some heaven somewhere. And we are fed these weakening ideas for ages, that there is some God who in one hand holds the whip and in another hand holds the boon. That if you don't abide by His commandments, that God will whip you or send you to eternal damnation, eternal hell. Or there is If you please that God by praises, then that God will give you something by which you will ascend to eternal heaven, where you will be enjoying all different pleasures eternally. So, we keep on thinking that whether I am doing this sin or that sin, why am I doing these things, what will make us virtuous. Really speaking, there is no God that ever does it. You are the master. You have to take charge of your destiny. Don't blame or hope that some God is going to come and rescue you out of this mess. No God is ever rescuing you. You yourself are that God. This wisdom is there on every page of Upanishads and Bhagavad Gita and Vedanta. There is no extra cosmic God sitting somewhere on some throne and directing affairs of this world like a tyrant. That according to is a big tyrant then. Therefore, the idea of that kind of a God who is there somewhere and is directing this universe is completely against democracy. In democracy, this kind of thing not a democratically elected God, you see, not a democratically elected ruler. It is somebody who is a dictator, and that everybody has to submit to the wish of that kind of a God. Otherwise, there is eternal hell reserved for you. And if you did something like that, and if you give enough money to the priests, then they will take care, they will write a recommendation letter to that God. They are very close. They are his cronies. So you, through them, then you can get rid of that. And then you will be granted eternal heaven. It is just like that these are ridiculed by those very beautiful fictitious writings, but very revealing, like that Alice in Wonderland, or that queen, off with their heads, you know. The God is we are always told to stand in terror of that God, because any time he would say, off with your head, and that's the end of it. It is, Vedanta could never understand these ideas, never accepted them. All this, extra cosmic God sitting somewhere and directing the affairs of this world. And that is a standing libel on our rational understanding. Why we call ourselves a rational being and yet subscribe to such funny views is beyond me. That some God sitting somewhere, who made that God? Who knows? We ourselves make that God and then scared of that God. You know, it is like you see your own shadow and are scared some ghost is there. It is like that. In dark places, suddenly some light from far distance is coming, and you see your long shadow there. But you don't realize it that it is your shadow. And you see that some ghost is trying to catch me, and we remain in terror, we live in terror, even though we put all our defenses, this terror that our mind creates, who can get rid of that? You can have many nuclear weapons to protect you, many other defense. What is that called? Missile defense. You can have that. But what about this living in this hellish terror? We make the hell like that. It is, if we smile, we feel the God may punish for because I smiled. It was rather too broad a smile. It should be smaller. So it is this kind of idea, Bhagavad Gita just is condemning. Here we saw that the 14th and 15th verses that we saw, that there is nobody that is doing all these things, giving you sin or giving you some virtue, giving you, taking you to heaven or taking you to hell. And there is no such agency except you yourself in ignorance. In ignorance, you are getting this hallucination. And the goal, therefore, is to get rid of this hallucination. Nādatte kasyacit pāpam, 15th verse. Nachaiva sukritam vibhu, ajñāne nāvritam jñānam, tena muhyanti jantavah. Very strong words that don't lay blame on anybody. The omnipresent Lord does not accept the sin or virtue of anybody. Knowledge is enveloped by ignorance. Because of this, beings get deluded. The knowledge of our true nature, that is eternal, all-pervading, everywhere, that is covered. And because of that, that ignorance, we feel, I am so and so. And thus we get connected with so many things in different ways and different persons. We hate somebody, love somebody, act sometimes so-called wisely, sometimes so-called foolishly. We feel we have hurt somebody, we feel we have helped somebody. When we get the feeling that, I have said a wrong word to that person, I have hurt the feelings of that person, then that brings sin to me, because I know that I have hurt that person, and thus I get the sin from it. Nobody is there to give that sin to us except this knowledge. And I similarly get a foolish idea that I have helped somebody, that somebody was otherwise going to doom, but I graciously helped that person. I have done a great good deed, so I feel I have done something meritorious, that will acquire some merit to me. No merit, no sin. There is no God who gives you all that. It is absolutely nobody, friends, that is doling out these things to us. Let us get rid of this idea of fear. Swami Vivekananda many times was asked that how could you control people if you do not preach this idea of sin? You have to preach this idea of sin. Otherwise, people will not be under our thumb. How can you preach religion to people without preaching this idea of fearing the God? The God, the fearful. And Swami Vivekananda replied that, that is not the God that I know. And God, it is sometimes you feel that is God required to keep us in check. But that is just a very bad derogatory idea. He said that I will have no respect for human civilization if it requires this kind of an idea of God to keep it moral. So, in fact, he has, Swami Vivekananda's force of argument is tremendous. He said, look, we have been fearing all the time, you have preached fear. For thousands of years you have been preaching fear of that God to people. And has that made the world any moral? In fact, look at the wars, look at the killings, look at all those atrocities committed in the name of that God, that religion. Has that made the world any moral? It is not. So give up this idea that we need some God who is giving boon by this hand and has a whip in the other hand. No, that God is not required by us. It is, what is this? That God is all-pervading. That is my true nature also. Ajnane navritam jnanam. But becoming deluded in ignorance, I feel, I am such tiny entity, I am so and so. And then I keep on looking for props, something to find shelter somewhere. This God or that or something, it is this ignorance. And therefore Vedanta promises that this knowledge will remove the ignorance and all the problems which are generated by this ignorance. The ignorance being the cause of all the problems, like some bacteria in the stomach was the cause of dysentery and headache and consequent fever. Now, if you find the proper medicine that kills that bacteria, symptoms of that disease, they will also go away. So, our fear, these ideas of likes and dislikes, our ideas of pleasure and pain, all will go away. In the beginning of his commentary on Brahma Sutra, Shankaracharya, Brahma Sutras is the aphorisms on Brahman by a great sage Vyasa. Shankara has written a beautiful commentary, and the preface or the introductory part of that commentary is ending. It ends with this statement that Vedanta identifies ignorance and the confusion that is caused by this ignorance, confusion between real and unreal. Confusion between what is permanent and what is transitory. This confusion, it is technically called superimposition. One thing appearing as other. That is called superimposition. This superimposition, he says, there is the cause of all bondage and suffering. That being the case, the knowledge that removes this suffering or this superimposition will automatically remove all the suffering and usher in what we are looking for in life, that is the eternal bliss and peace. That is our nature. It is, peace is not to be imported from somewhere. Peace is our actually true nature. So therefore we ask somebody, Like you can ask why, Rishali, why you look disturbed today? You ask like that. Why you look peaceful today? Nobody asks. Peace, becoming peaceful doesn't require a reason. That is our nature. It has to be there. But if you are not peaceful, then it requires a cause. That becoming peaceful doesn't need a cause. It is natural. If there is disturbance, then you have to find out what caused it. So, this knowledge is the reason by which it is removed. Ignorance being the cause of it, in the 16th verse, it is therefore elaborated. But those whose ignorance has been destroyed by the knowledge of the self, their knowledge, like sun, manifests the highest being. Jnanena tu tadajnanam yesham nashitam atmanah tesham adityavat jnanam prakashayati tatparam. So, just to explain, he has used positive and negative both ways. The destruction of ignorance means automatically the shining of the knowledge. And shining forth of the knowledge automatically means the destruction of ignorance. Like, sun is shining. Then you don't have to separately make efforts to get rid of the darkness. That sun is shining automatically means the darkness has gone. It is not that you have to make other special efforts to expel the darkness. As Sri Ramakrishna used to beautifully say, that if you are going towards east, then you don't have to make special efforts to push the west to the other side. And going to east automatically means west falls behind. So, similarly, getting the knowledge means the ignorance is destroyed, and this can be achieved in life. As we have always noticed in Bhagavad Gita, it is a practical science with tremendous emphasis on actualization of this knowledge in life. It is absolutely not only a theoretical or a poetic or a rational philosophy. It is very poetic. Surely it is very rational. Surely it is intellectually satisfying, but it is only a small part of it. Most of the Bhagavad Gita is connected to the practical application, illumining our actual day-to-day life with this knowledge. Not just poetical imagination, which goes very high. And then, you take a drug, and then you go very high. It is like that. And next moment you dum. Bhagavad Gita is not like that. It transforms the lives of people so that they experience these truths, and these truths then, being truth, this experience is of a very special nature. It is a lasting experience. It is harmonizing experience. It not only shows you the truth, it also harmonizes what you were earlier, before knowledge, whatever you were seeing, why you were seeing that, how you were seeing that, and how it is all included in this truth. It is not rejection of anything. It is rejection only of foolishness or dumbness. So, this knowledge is to be acquired. there is a method for doing it. And that is narrated in the 17th verse. Very beautiful verse. Firstly, what needs to be done is to make that as the focus of our life. Because getting that alone is going to bring us whatever we are truly seeking in life. Let us, friends, be sure of this. That unless we realize that truth, nothing that we are seeking in life will be available to us. What we will be getting otherwise in life will be just mere glass beads that children play with. Nothing more than that. It is therefore told here that let that be the focus of your life. Like somebody realizes that getting that particular job is the goal of my life, because that is going to bring me whatever I am thinking of doing in life. So that person then concentrates all energies in acquiring that job. Every other activity is woven around it. That person will go to meet a boss in that company where the job is. If the interview is at 10 o'clock, that person will make sure that he or she reaches there by 9, to making allowance for traffic jams, this or that, anything, because that cannot be missed. It is a high priority, highest priority. But then you will have to miss your lunch. I don't care. I will think of lunch later. That is not important. That person will just forget lunch. Oh, but you didn't sleep last night. You need some rest now. After the interview, I will think of rest. I don't have time for it now. Every activity is just woven around that. So, if you understand that realization of the truth is what you need in life, and our rational mind understands it, what do you want in life, truth or untruth? Nobody is going to say, I want untruth. Do you want real or unreal in life? Who is going to say, I want unreal in life? We want the real, the truth in life. It is, only thing is that we have to tune our life to that understanding. Therefore, it is said now, this is a verse for implementation. Tadbuddhayas tadatmanas tannishtha tatparayanaha gachyanti apunaravrittim jnana nirdhuta kalmashah. Those who are decided on that, whose mind is set on that, who are devoted to that, and whose last resort is that, attain to non-return with their sins winnowed off by knowledge. That, because it has no name, it is unlimited, that, you know, you can see this expression that in Sanskrit, that the word is Tad. Therefore, the last word is Om Tat Sad. Tat mean that is the truth. That is a pronoun which signifies everything. That is all pervading, you know. Anything can be termed as that. So, the all-pervading reality also therefore has the name that. Tat tvam asi, that thou art. That whatever that your object of search, which is beyond all limitations. This means puts a limitation, you know. This is means something that you are experiencing, something that is limited. It is signified by this. That is everything, you know. It is that can be used for anything, even something beyond solar system, that black hole. It is that. The word this is used something that is of your immediate experience. So, when that becomes our immediate experience, that becomes this. It is, we realize that what I was thinking far away is really within me. It is my true nature. I am that. That becomes then the experience of the person of knowledge. I am that. So, it is said how one attains to that. Tad buddhayah. Let us keep our thinking glued to that. Buddhi means our intellect, our thinking faculty. Think about it all the time. Instead of thinking of all the other things, that who is going to win this election and who is going to win the ball game or for such things, when am I going to get raise in my salary. All these thoughts are occupying our mind, and because we think that they are important. So, instead of that, let the thought of God be occupying our minds, our intellects. Let our brain always think of that. Tad buddhayah. That our mind, let it think of what is real. Why waste time in what is in thinking of what is not real? Think of what is real. Is it not worthwhile? Is it not more practical to think of what is real than thinking of what is unreal? It is really very simple. You know, the most of the questions that Vedanta poses before us are no-brainer. You know, simple answers, straightforward. That who wants misery? No one wants. Who wants bondage? No one wants. Well, then see the cause of the bondage and remove it. We call ourselves rational and so forth, but most of us are not. That Buddha was a rational being. But otherwise, who is rational here? We just take false pride in being rational, that's all. It is Buddha saw. In Puerto Rico, one gentleman was very much impressed. He told me about that. It was not the topic of discussion, but he was very much impressed by reading that how Buddha saw and came to those four noble truths. That saw the old man, saw a person who is very sick and suffering, saw a corpse, a dead person, and saw that this is the nature of the world, coming and going. And we are marching towards that. Every time he was asking to his that charioteer, do you mean it is going to happen to me too? Oh, well, it happens to everyone. You are also subject to that. You are also going to die. "Oh, well." And he immediately came, therefore, to the conclusion that the first noble truth, that all here is surrounded, infested, pervaded with suffering. Sarvam dukkham. Sarvam dukkham. Everything here is fraught with suffering. What a great truth that he came to see clearly. Not that we don't see corpse, we see, but still feel that I am going to be immortal. The others, they come, they die, but I am not going to die, I am going to be immortal. It doesn't come home, it doesn't strike home that this is, this body is unreal. We should see that, yes, everybody becomes old and the strength of the limbs is lost, but feel that I can avoid the old age. I will never become old. I will buy a dye and put it on my head, and that will take care of my appearance. And then I will do some other things. I will take those vitamins and minerals and all that, and that will, our Vishwanath is a great advocate of that. So it is that will keep me young all the time and so forth. So it is, we don't see, we see and don't see. Buddha saw and saw. We see and don't see. That is the difference. So, let us train our intellect to become like Buddha's intellect. It is matter of training, you know. Now, training is not same as book learning. It is, there are schools for education and school for training. Training means really hands-on, practical. Then there are, like in the military, there is training. And it involves a lot of strenuous undertakings. If you are told in military, hold the rifle like that, hold it properly, put it properly to your shoulder. If you don't put that in the correct position, that officer comes and gives you a whacking. It is, or makes you go 100 push-ups, come on. Why? It is for training, you know, it is the matter of training. Even dogs are trained like that. No, not much of a difference. Same technique, you know. If that dog is told jump, if it jumps, then a treat. Okay, it is a treat for you. If it refuses, then a blow. So that it gets trained, understands. So our intellect has to get trained. And that training is a matter of practice. Training is not just a matter of reading a book. It takes more than that to get ourselves trained. Why there is so much emphasis on a disciplined routine, following this practice in a strict, methodical manner? The method is very important. It is the discipline is very important. It is not something that one can do in a haphazard, ad hoc manner. It is very important, therefore, to stick to that discipline, undertake that training. Tad buddhayah, that is very significant word there. That let our intellect get the training of thinking of this topic alone, thinking of God alone. Then somebody may ask that, well, I have to do lot of job. Arunim will say, I have to be always on that customer support, on the calls and this and that. And if I keep on thinking of that Brahman all the time, if our customer calls, I am on customer support. And if I give him a piece of Bhagavad Gita there, then that will be disastrous. How can I do that? That is not the idea. And just as even when you are doing all those works, you are conscious of, say, I am Arunim and I am doing this work. So, you are not thinking of that, but you are still conscious, aware that I am Arunim. Instead of that, keep on bringing this awareness that all is really that one all-pervading Brahman. While thinking that, do all the actions. And you may say that, well, then I will make mistakes. No. In fact, you will do your works much, much better. It is because you will be more objective, you will be more detached, your mind will not get bogged down by various other non-essential considerations. And the training will make you separate essentials from non-essentials. In many of these, even the worldly problems, solving the technical worldly problems, you have to learn to separate the essentials from the non-essentials. So, that is a training. Like our doctor in the village has to do that. The patient, he would tell what is happening. The patient would tell 100 things. Like, you know, I go to my niece sometimes, and she is such a nice lady, and then just graduated, and tell 10 things about the niece. It has no relevance to the disease of this fellow. Then, well, there on the way, I stopped at a restaurant and ate such and such thing. And that probably is causing my stomach ache. And so the doctor had to take that, you know, what is necessary, what is relevant, what is essential, that is to be winnowed from what is unessential. This is a training required for every profession. For every proper, any profession, you need this skill. Otherwise, you are lost in the flood of all unessential details. It is, therefore, this is a good training even for that. In the world, see what is essential, what is not essential. You will soon realize that God is the essential thing. And God means here that. That is the essential thing in life. If that is not there, nothing will take place. That is the screen on which this movie of the world is playing. That screen is essential. It is eternal. The movie is over after 1 hour. The screen was there before the movie. Screen will be there after the movie. Screen is there, the reality, even when the movie is there. Had there been no screen, you couldn't see a movie. So that idea of essentiality becomes well understood. You know, Sri Ramakrishna tells it many times to the devotees. We have read a few times in the that Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna class that he tells devotees, always think what is real and what is unreal, what is permanent, what is impermanent. think properly what is permanent and what is impermanent. That is how we should train our intellect to think and act accordingly. When we get an idea that something is impermanent, our mind will automatically reduce the importance that we associate with it. So, tad buddhayah, tadatmanah, that your mind therefore gets set on that. Think of that, put your mind also on that. Means, connect your mind to that. In Vedanta, thinking faculty is different from the feeling faculty. That thinking is one work of our inner instrument. It is called antakkaran, the inner instrument. The inner instrument is akin to the software that runs this hardware of the body. And it has four functions. One function is to assess all the possibilities, to run through all the available things. Then the second function is to choose from them what is the right one. Then the third one, that is what when you do the Google search, that is essentially what you do. You know, you put some words, then that search engine runs through the data available looking for those words, something that resembles that. So, it is that is what this does, that first is to open up the possibilities, and then run through the possibilities and select what matches. The first is called the mind, the second is called the intellect. The third is called the faculty of memory, storage. Store things properly so that searching becomes faster, easier. When you pigeonhole those experiences, every experience that you get, you have to properly pigeonhole it. Like the books in the library or whatever, many things, you know, in the kitchen also, if you arrange all your those ingredients and spices and all that properly, your work becomes faster. So this is the job of the function memory. Then the fourth is the function that connects all these, called the sense of I or ego. So these four functions are there. The first that is told, that is intellect. Put your intellect on that. Secondly, put your feelings also on that. When you know that something is permanent, something is real, then your mind will go to that. It is, if you are shown that this is a picture of a candy and this is real candy. If you know which is picture and which is the real candy, you will pick up a real candy. It is, you won't go for the picture then. So whatever your mind takes as real, it will go to that. So therefore, when we see that all-pervading reality or God is real, then the mind will go to that. So tadatmanah, tannishtha. Another beautiful word. Let that be the focus. You know? Your attention will be always on that. Your allegiance will always be to that. You will be always tied to that. Like people who are very politically tied to certain parties and all that. like I am a Democrat, then their mind is always, you know, established in that, I am a Democrat. And therefore they won't see, even if somebody is doing good work, Republican, forget it, say. Is not to be under that recognized. If Democrats is doing something bad, no, don't, they are not, they cannot do anything bad. It is because of the particular allegiance to the party. It is, but you see, this kind of allegiance is based on very temporary things. You cannot really establish any permanent thing on that. It is like somebody was asking me today this question that Osama bin Laden was once our very staunch ally. And then now he became our enemy. Once in Afghanistan, we provided him all the weapons to fight against Russia. Now it seems Russians are providing him all the resources to fight against our troops. So, because that is politics, that is the equations keep on constantly changing. So you cannot have permanent allegiance with any of these things. Always shifting. So, what is permanent? Because those things are not permanent in themselves. How can you have permanent allegiance to non-permanent things? This idea itself is ridiculous. But what is real, permanent, and to that you can have a permanent allegiance. You can be tied to that. And yes, therefore it is told that hold that. May your loyalty be always with that. Be always devoted to that, tan nishtha. It is difficult to translate this word, nishtha. It is you are always tied in your mind with that. That is your stability. Stha means that it comes from the root, stha, means to be stable. So that is your stability, that is your abode, so to say. You remain there. Wherever you may go, you will always remember that you are in God. Like that nice song, we belong to God. Wherever we may go, whatever may happen, we always belong to God. That sense of belonging to this. Otherwise we belong to unrealities. That I belong to such and such state. I belong to Rhode Island. Now, Rhode Islands never are wanting in praising our state. But yet, we know that it cannot be true like that. We cannot have such permanent allegiance or permanent loyalties. It is because these are all shifting things. It is like that nice story that Iowa and the what is the other state there? That is in borderline with that where there are lot of storms. Iowa and I think Dakota. So South Dakota, I think. So that some villages on the borderline, there was a survey that they were earlier, some people claimed that that village falls in South Dakota. Some said that no, they're from in Iowa. So when it was proper survey and measurements, they told them that no, you are in Iowa. And then they heaved a sigh of relief. Wow, saved from those terrible storms of Dakota. Now, they didn't go anywhere. You know. But just that, you know, that it is. If you are associated with, no, you are in Kansas. Oh my goodness, that means those tornadoes are surely going to, because I belong to Kansas now, so the tornadoes are going to come to me. Your place, this didn't change at all, nothing changed, but the understanding. So this is very important, tannishtha, tatparayanaha. You always are devoted, actively devoted. This word again, parayana, is there are some Democrats, that example becomes handy because this being normally a blue state, there are Democrats who vote for Democrats. That much, always voting for a Democratic candidate, yeah. But they are not actively involved in campaign or working for the party. It is their devotion to the party is more passive. Not that always they go out to vote either. If it suits them, if it doesn't conflict with their other schedule, they may go and vote, that's all. Not more than that. But there are some who will take up the active campaigning. They will forgo their other these things, rest or sleep or their pastime. They will go for working for that. They will raise funds. They will donate to the party and all that. So that is an active devotion, passive devotion and active devotion. So, Parayana suggests an active devotion that you have the interest of that so much in your mind that your life is governed by that. And all these words, they are very important for practice. In fact, that can be mentioned as the four yogas. The Tadbuddhayaha, that is the yoga of knowledge, jnana yoga. Tadatmanaha, that is the yoga of devotion. Tannishtha, the yoga of meditation or concentration. And Tatparayanaha, yoga of action. All these are very beautifully told here. Then when you practice that, well, that becomes a reality. The training gradually makes your mind firmly established in it, and thus now that became the reality for you, then you don't come back again in this suffering world. You transcend it forever. It is there alone those fairy tale becomes has some chance of becoming true, that they lived happily ever after. It is only, but here you can say they live happily ever after, because they have really transcended that sphere of suffering. In fairy tale, when somebody gets married, that fellow after lot of hurdles somehow catches hold of the princess, then it is said that, well, then they lived happily forever, because they don't want to extend the story anymore into the suffering that follows it. But it is, therefore they conclude with that. But here it is, you cross the very cause of suffering and bondage, Jnana Nirdhuta Kalmashah, or your whole sin is removed by the shower of knowledge. And the shower of knowledge washes off all ignorance, and now you are established in the truth. That is how the process goes, you know. So, let us begin that process. That is the idea. Let us get trained. And when we get trained, we shall automatically see the effects in life. So, any questions? Okay. Oh, you have, Terry, a question. Okay.
Yeah, thank you. The God that you spoke about in the beginning was the God that I was brought up with. And so there was a lot of fear, and it took a long time to get from there to where I am now. My question is, are all of the Indian children brought up with the belief in there being God?
Most of the Indian children also are brought up with what you say, the same upbringing. There is a but to that. In the background there are these Indian scriptures are always there. And therefore even when that upbringing is sometimes done like that, the God is there, will always that God is referred to as somebody within you. Not a God sitting beyond the cloud, but the God that is within you. So that is the difference.
Why then do you use the word God?
The word God is very helpful. The word God, because it brings into play all the auspiciousness, all the devotion, all the tradition of the sages associated with that word. Somebody may have been or put into that upbringing of with that God who is punishing, who is this and that. But that is only a very small part of God. See, the great sages, they have used that word. Let me tell another word. People get the use of swastika. Because Hitler used that symbol, that swastika is bad. Hitler used it maybe for 20-25 years. That symbol has been the religious symbol for thousands and thousands of years, very nicely used by sages to impart all the positive, auspicious ideas. Should we be giving up that symbol simply because Hitler used it for a few years? That is not understanding the facts. So, it is like that. You know why? Some people might have misused the word God, but compared to the history of how many people used that word correctly and what great tradition it connects us to, I consider that word God is very good, like the word self, very good word. And even the problem is again of using some other word. That word also has the same potential of getting misused. Any word that you bring in has the potential of being misused. You cannot prevent that. The question is that why should we misuse it? If you have a problem with the word God, that is, I can understand that. But that doesn't mean that the word God is problematic. Like somebody may have an allergy with peanuts. But that doesn't mean that peanut is a bad thing in life. It's like that.
Thank you.
Yes, Charles.
I don't understand exactly how a thought of God can become the reality of God. How does it actually transform?
Well, that is what that method has been told.
What did you just say earlier?
Yeah. That a thought of... See, the thought that you have, about all these, about the mango and the thought of other fruits or the thought of some movie, all these thoughts are about unreal things. And therefore, those thoughts will never become reality in life. And the thought that, well, I will get happiness by eating a candy, that thought will remain only a thought. It will never become a reality because it is associated with unreal. But if you think of God, then that thought being the thought of real, it will become real. Let us conclude with the closing prayers. We shall continue to study this very absorbing topic. It is next Friday, this Bhagavad Gita class will be replaced by some other program which will be announced on coming Sunday.
Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Vistaraihi Ya Swayam Padmanabhasya Mukhapadmadvinesrita Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko mantrah tasya namani yani karmapyekam tasya devasya seva Shri Krishna arpanamastu.